Frank Delaney has delightedly joined us in conversation. Bill Russell, you were putting forth the possibility of integrity in the midst of that. We have a friend who won the Ulysses Prize for literary reportage. She's Alexandra Fuller, and she says her job as a reporter, a literary reporter, is what she got the award for, and it's a good description, affirmation. She says her job is to be a connector, that she goes out to find the dots and then to connect them. And in a way, that's what I'm hearing both of you say about stories.
Yes. I want to be more than a connector. I want to be a driver. I want to take you into a book that I've written. I will know my purpose beforehand. And I want to keep you there. First of all, on the simple value for money basis. I want to entertain you. Let me entertain you. That's what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to keep you there because you, the reader, this is very important to me, you, the reader, are going to help me, because I'm writing for you, make sense of my own life through what I'm writing, make order out of my own chaos. And the more I can grip you with a story, the better I can do that. So in terms of connector, yes, by all means, join all the dots. But I start, when I'm setting out a book, I have never, ever known the end of a book. I've just delivered a novel to my publishers, which comes out next March. It's called Shannon. And I did not know how the book was going to end.
Isn't that a little alarming?
This was very alarming. This is seriously alarming because this is the whole function of the book hinged on the final decision. And the final decision comes, as it happens, quite naturally, in the second last sentence of the book.
Did it surprise you?
It did. It did startle me, but it's completely right. And it was based entirely on the character's integrity. But here's the point. It was another character in the book who told me how the book was going to end. That fascinates me.
In Ireland, you talk about poetry coming out of the sky, that all those words live there and they're just waiting.
Of course they do, Paula. Where else are they gone? You know, all these words that we're speaking here now, they're going out through that door there and they're going up into the ether. Somebody else will borrow those one day and hold on a bunch of them when he wants them and say, hey guys, look what I found, you know. You may even use them playing Scrabble.
Writing novels seems to me to be a two-step creative process. I think of E.L. Doctorow talking about his experience writing the book and then seeing what he has written as he gets responses from readers. And trying the story he thinks he's telling and the story other people read, and ultimately the final creation is really a creation. It's a public creation amongst the general audience and the author, but it's also a very personal creation between the individual reader,
yes,
and the author and the story. And that troika, if you will, is I think for every person unique. Because much of what the story says is it comes from your own experience, what you bring to it, and that ongoing series of creativity in a narrative way seems to me to be at the center of what makes us human, and at our best makes us the children of angels.
You lead your readers into telling them what they think of you. I've got an interesting thing happening to me in the United States. I've been living here now for 6 years, and these books have been published in the United States, Ireland, and Tipperary. And what I'm getting is something that I've never had before, is the one-to-one response I'm getting from readers is intense.
Hmm.
Of a kind I've never had in my life before.
This didn't happen in the United Kingdom?
No, and nor in Ireland, and it didn't happen in broadcasting. The emotional response of people who come to me and talk about these books is peculiarly intense.
Well, that is to say, you have written books that have been widely available in the UK.
I've over 20 books published, you know. And I wrote three novels of a set of five yet to be finished about the Holocaust, and didn't provoke anything like these reactions. But there's been a personal thing here that has quite staggered me. And this is what I think it's about. There's a very good English novelist, now forgotten sadly, called Henry Green, who wrote Living, Loving, Party Giving, beautifully wrought pieces of work. Small novels, but, you know, he cut them like a gemologist, cut stones. Mm. Beautiful. And he described the relationship between writer and reader as an intimacy between strangers. But I don't have readers. I have a reader.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know who that reader is, but I know it is somebody that I must respect, whose intelligence I may never underestimate, but whose knowledge I'm entitled to underestimate.
Which is what you have your storyteller in Ireland say.
Absolutely. That's completely right. He speaks for me in many ways. And, you know, Nabokov said that the novelist is three things. He's a teacher, or a storyteller, or a magician. And then Nabokov, being Nabokov, said, and the great novelist like me is all three. But that
is
the aspiration.
He has license to say that.
I agree.
But
with great respect to Mr. Nabokov, I would have said it might have come better at the end of his life rather than at the beginning.
Well, there's that.
And he might have said, and that is my aspiration,
no.
Which is certainly my aspiration, but I'd settled for one. And now here's the interesting thing. I then have to ask myself, if you could have only one,
yes,
which would you want? And B, which do you think you are?
Okay, do it again.
A teacher, a storyteller, or a magician?
And of course the answer is?
A magician.
Of course.
Right. But so what do I think I am? I think I'm a teacher. Now, other people say I'm a storyteller, but I think I'm a teacher.
And what is it you're teaching?
Well,
I think I'm teaching people the history of my own country, which is a curious microcosm out there on what the French call the façade atlantique, the Atlantic shores of Europe, which has a lesson in it for so many people.
Isn't that part of why you're getting this tremendous response in the United States? Is there so many Irish among us?
56 million. A cool niche, I would have said.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you want a niche market, go for one that's got 56 million people in it.
We have a young friend who is just back from Australia who brought us a map that matches one that we brought back from New Zealand that says Down Under no longer, and it has done this wonderful thing. It just flips the compass, and it puts Australia and New Zealand up here, and then everybody else down here. So what we think of as the Southern Hemisphere becomes at the north of the map, if I'm making that clear. Yeah. And you know, and it's very startling. I mean, I have literally had people who are quite self-confident kind of come unglued over this map. And I once had a chief executive officer of a big company walk to the front where I was standing with it and move it. He couldn't stand it. He turned it over to his way of seeing, which said a great deal about him. But in a way, that's what you're doing with the Irish story. You're flipping the geography.
I'm asking a question that I'm trying to answer at the same time. How is it that this tiny island, which if you turned it sideways and squeezed it a little, would fit into the state of Connecticut, with 3.5-4 million people on it, how is it that this place daubed such a huge, wide green stripe all around the globe?
Mm-hmm.
Why do they turn the river in Chicago green every St. Patrick's Day? What other country has a national day all over the world?
St. Patrick's Day.
St. Patrick's Day. So that's the question I'm asking, and that's the question I'm trying to answer. I think it's got to do with what we started talking about first, which is story and expression. I think that's what it is.
The stories are just critical. The other part of this, and we've seen it, we did a program earlier in the week with two people from different perspectives looking at Tibet. And part of it, I think, is the diaspora. So many Irishmen and women
who left but never left.
Had to leave for a variety of reasons.
To survive.
So they were, and in some cases were deported.
Yes.
But they covered essentially the English-speaking world. Mm. So you've got that, that's part of it. And I think that longing, that having to leave instead of leaving voluntarily, instead of seeking a more brilliant future, just escaping an insufferable present.
And but it's also what they brought with them. The first book I wrote was about James Joyce. I wrote a book for people who failed to finish reading Ulysses.
That would be a large audience.
It was a bestseller.
That's about 95%, I think.
It was a bestseller. And of course, in the course of that, I remembered and was reminded forcibly what Joyce took with him when he left Ireland. He said, I take with me as my only weapons silence, exile, and cunning. And I think that's a lot of what's been going. It worked.
And stories.
Frank Delaney will be with us when we return in a moment with a lot of stories. Please be with us when we return with the Paul Gordon Show.